Good to see you. Hey guys, I'm Patty. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Patty.
And I'm so excited for y'all to hear Mary Ann's story tonight. I have the good fortune to work with her as a sponsor, and she's taught me a boatload about perseverance, about hard work, about being willing to take suggestions, even if maybe she kicks and screams and at first. I think you told your story here a couple years ago, and the last 2 years of her transformation have been unbelievable. And I'm so excited because you see the world with humor, and I appreciate that. So. Hi, everybody. Thank you, everybody, for coming out tonight. My name is Mary Ann, and I am an alcoholic, and my sobriety day, this is as close as I'll ever get to my Academy Award, because I am an actress. So my sobriety date is March 24th, 2020. So I'm going to read something before I get started. There's two passages. I'll read one in the beginning, one at the end that I love. This is from the Big Book, page 17. The feeling of having shared in a common peril is one element in the powerful cement which binds us. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. So I love that. And that is from There Is a Solution. So I was born in Barstow, California, and I was born to a big, large Catholic family. I was the fifth of eight, and it was a loving family. I mean, we had our stuff. I had one brother who was special needs, and we had a lot of trauma from that. But other than that, we moved every 2 to 5 years. My father worked for the Santa Fe Railroad, and I had my first taste of beer at 4 when I was sitting on his lap. And that's probably the biggest memory I have now. So I had that taste of beer, bitter. I remember thinking, ooh, this is kind of good. My drinking really started when I was like 13, and for me that seems normal for most people. We moved around, like I said, every 2 to 5 years, and I just started drinking like everybody else, and couldn't just have the one. I remember that. And had to have more than that. But just as I was feeling really good and nice, then I would just keep drinking, and I got sick every time. I just got sick. In fact, I didn't like it, you know. So I think a lot of us, I grew up real sensitive, worried about people and what they thought of me. That was a big one. A lot of people pleasing. I was very empathic and still am. And my mom used to say, I don't know why you're talking about that. Let's not talk about that. That I felt things very deeply. After we moved to Chicago, that was a suburb of Chicago, Naperville, and that was the last big move, and that's when things really started to pick up, because I was now in high school, went to college. But there was a big significant thing that happened during that time. I had a child, had a baby when I was 17, and I gave her up for adoption because that's what you did. I was sent away, and then I came back when it was all over. And the shame that took me from that was just, it was almost too much to bear. That is when I can remember now, looking back, that my drinking really picked up. And then, during the disco era, I met this guy at a bar, of course. And he was all bandaged up, and you could barely see his face. And he came over to me and said, hi, and what's your name? And I'd like to take you out. What's your phone number? I said, oh, good. Oh, yeah, I'll go out. So course, I gave him my phone number. Then he comes to pick me up to go hear some jazz downtown. And he goes, turn around. And he looks me up and down. He goes, okay, I didn't know what you looked like, you know. So, but I went. I went, and I dated this guy for 2 years. So that's very alcoholic-y. It took me 6 months into it. I was so good about picking out, you know, other alcoholics, you know, and I knew immediately he had a problem. 6 months into it, I wanted to get away, so what did I do? Like a good alcoholic, I move because I can't handle it. So I moved to Kansas City to be with my sister. That's where I met and married my sweet husband over there after 43 years. And poor Mark, we were two peas in a pod. He comes from, he's an adult child of an alcoholic father who died and left his mom with seven children. So we really had a lot to discuss. And at that time, I didn't know that alcoholism ran in my family. But now looking back, I think probably my dad was one of us and probably my brother. But it was interesting because later when I got sober, I found out so much. There was an uncle, there was a grandfather. It was rampant. After getting away from Dave and meeting my husband, we moved here to Atlanta, and that's when the drinking kind of subsided. And I had kids, we had two kids, and I stayed home. Well, I worked part-time, but I loved being a mother, and we didn't have alcohol in the house. The only time that I would drink, of course, is when I went out to a party or something, and of course, then I couldn't have one. Always got sick. I did not enjoy it. You know, I enjoyed it to that certain point, you know, where I'm feeling good, but I couldn't stop. And so then it was just all over. But I didn't drink for a long time. And then in 1989, my brother, my other brother, who was 24, took his life. And it was due to alcohol, definitely depression and alcohol. And that was the first time I ever heard the word allergy. And the doctor told my parents, John has an allergy and he should never drink again. But we didn't know what that meant. Of course, then I was taking classes, I think at the time, on alcoholism, but I don't remember hearing it then. As time went on, when I look back, with each major thing in my life, like a job change or a child leaving home, the recession, my drinking picked up. And I remember this one time leaving a job that I really liked. I was recruited to come and work with my friend for a startup Medicare company. And so I did all of these events and, you know, had all this liquor and it was wonderful and just had fun with that. But I remember then how obsessed I became with wine then. I would go to the liquor store and I would take notes, you know, as if I was shopping for clothes. And, you know, it was ridiculous. I started to get into craft beer and I would take notes on that. But that's when I really remember it picking. Then in 2014, we moved to Denver for a year, and that is when I remember the beer was in our house every day. And that was when I started to feel the guilt. If you notice, my progression was very slow. So it just, and then towards the end, it sped up. In 2014, we moved to Denver. I had beer in the house all the time. That was when my husband started to say things like, you know, you're drinking too much, we can't afford this, you know, and that's when, you know, I started to really have the guilt. We moved back to Atlanta, and in 2019, I had a blackout, and which you did not know about.
I didn't know about that baby.
Oh, okay. This is when my drinking was just getting out of control, and I felt it. I did not have any of the yets. I had not killed anybody yet. I had not gone to rehab yet. I had not gone to jail yet. But things were moving very fast. It was frightening. I remember thinking, oh my God, what is going on? And so in June, I dropped our daughter off and I thought, I can't stop. So that was my first recollection of just not physically knowing that I could not stop. Later that summer, my husband sat me down and he said, Marianne, your eyes are crazy, your face is puffy, you're an alcoholic, and you need to get help. And so that is when we talk about the mustard seed of willingness. At that moment was when I had that mustard seed of willingness, and I said, okay. So I said, and he said, you need to go to AA, and I said, okay, I'll go. So took all the beer, took it over to the neighbor's house, who now I think he's probably one of us. So just sharing it. So I went to my first meeting with my brother-in-law. He was in from New York. I said, I don't want you to tell the Dyers. You can't tell, you know, because we were the outlaws. I said, I'm going to go to a meeting with you. So we went to a meeting in Buckhead, and first thing he does is he goes, hey, this is his New York accent. This is their first meeting, you know. Anyway, but it was a good meeting, and when we left, Chris asked me, well, you're going to go back, aren't you? And I said, yes, of course, you know. And then I came here, picked up my first white chip, and all these wonderful women came swarming around me and giving me their phone numbers, and I thought, this is too much, I can't, this is too much. So I went home and I texted all of them, and I asked Mark, I said, can I just try to do this on my own? And you probably rolled your eyes and said, yeah, whatever. But I texted all of the women and I said, thank you so much. And I'm going to go to the doctor first and get a physical. And I said, and then I'll see you and I'll be back, I'm sure. But I did not go back. It took me to November of 2019, 4 months later, to finally come back. A couple of things that I did that were just not normal, things like drinking my tea and pretending it was tea when it was wine and having the little tea bag over the, you know, ripping off the bag and having a little tag so Mark would think I, you know, stealing. Now I was stealing liquor because I was feeling so guilty about the money, just so guilty. So I would steal the little box wine and I would drink it while I was shopping, and then I would ditch it in another aisle, you know. So I did a lot of that. I was drinking and driving at this time now, by this time. I was home alone. I was a 9-to-5 drinker. So, and I was home alone for 4 years, and it was during that time when I could just, you know, my husband would call and he could tell immediately. And this is when I was able to start mixing and drinking, and I never got sick. It was real interesting, and I really started to enjoy it, you know, a lot. So anyway, when I came in November 2019, there was something about these rooms. I remember walking in and thinking, I think I'm in the right place. What really got me were all of you, was the honesty, such honesty that I had never heard before. And I knew there was something that just told me that, you know, you're going to have to be coming back to these meetings. You'll never be able to stop. This is it. And I think, unlike a lot of people, I really could not wait to get into the steps. I came in with a faith tradition and a belief in my higher power, but I was honoring the bottle. So all of that just took, you know, that just went away. Step one, two, and three were not hard for me at all. I was so willing for my higher power to relieve me of the insanity, to relieve me of this obsession. And I do remember the obsession going fairly quickly. It wasn't lifted right away, but it went fairly quickly. I started to, because of all of those women, they were wonderful, that surrounded me, I thought, I got to take time in trying to find a sponsor. So I did find the best sponsor that I, in the world, and what drew me to her was her humility, and it was at the 11:30 Bridge Builders on a Saturday. And she was sitting right over there. Somebody asked, you know, hey, Patty, what, you know, share for us today, what's going on? She goes, well, I'm just another alcoholic on the bus. And that hit me, and I was like, wow, okay, that's what I want. I want that humility. She took me through the steps, and like I said, 1, 2, and 3 was easy for me. 4, I couldn't wait to write down my resentments, right? I thought, oh, this is going to be great, because I can't stand her and I can't stand him. And then what was shocking is that I was able to see my part, and that's been the best thing, one of the best things that I have learned in AA, to see my part. There's always something there that I need to look at. And I certainly didn't have any trouble with 5 in sharing this, because my sponsor knew that I was sensitive. She knew exactly where I was, and so she made it very comfortable for me to share. And then, I'm probably just a weirdo, but I mean, even 8, 9, and 10, or 8 and 9, they were difficult, but I couldn't wait to have it all done, and I was just so eager, and I did everything that was suggested. So when I did, you know, made my amends, they weren't as scary as I thought that they would be. And the things that I have learned so much from AA, three of the biggest things is that it's a we program. We can't do this alone. It's all of us here together. And meeting makers make it. I used to hate that. Meeting myself, God, that is so, meeting makers make it. But that has been, I mean, that's how it is for me. I try to go to the 9:30 every morning if I'm not working, and then I do a 5:45 Zoom, and I just book in the day because I need to. And they say, it was suggested that the times when you drink, probably the times you need to go to the meeting. So evening was always very difficult for me. The other thing that has saved me is sponsoring and then doing service. Service is, it's just, you all know what it feels like. And that's what keeps me sober is doing service and then sponsoring. And I remember when a sponsor took me through the steps after we were done, she said, okay, so are you ready to sponsor? And I said, no. So she said, now hold your hand up when they say, is there anybody here, you know, so. I just like, and then I would pray, please God, don't let anybody. But the sponsoring has been wonderful because it keeps me sober. And most of the women that I have sponsored, I don't know where they are, but I have one now, and she's really working hard at it. And it's nice to see, as everybody says, it's nice to see that light go on. I don't know if I left anything out, but I think I just want to read this, A Vision for You, and that is, I forget what page this is on, but we shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. And I love that, because it truly is. We're on this road of happy destiny. It's a we program. We're all in this together. The fellowship is phenomenal. You know, you can't find this anywhere. Just the honesty, and it's you know what we hear all the time. There are people that we probably would, some people that we would not mix on the outside or whatever. But here we all are. I care for each and every one of you to stay sober, and I know you feel that for me too. So anyway, thank you.
Thank you.
First I slip, and then I trip to a hope-filled dream. You rescue me, and finally, waking there I see. I look into a soul that's been falling, takes me where the promises are. broad highway. God walks us, we walk eternally. Take me where the promise.